Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is another one of our special Christmas Day episodes, part of our 12 days of the Comic Source. And I'm welcoming a friend back to the show who's a comic creator who's been on a few times before. And we're just going to catch up. We're going to talk about what he's been up to, some highlights of 2020, and maybe some things to look forward to in 2021. So it's my pleasure to welcome JT Kroll back to the show. JT, thanks for joining me.
Absolutely, Jace. Good to see you again.
Yeah, you too, man. It's been forever since I've seen you in person. I did see you do a few cons, you know, virtually this year. Let's start there. You know, usually you along with Aspen do quite a few shows. How's it been this year without, you know, being able to meet the fans and feed off that energy? You know, you've been home a lot more, obviously.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, it's funny. It's the cons are a great way for writers, especially, and artists too, but like for us to kind of come out of our shell and get some face time with the fans, as well as our co-creators and people we're working on projects with. Sometimes it's the only times I see the artist that I'm working with on something. And so being able to have that kind of downtime to just kind of hang out, it really helps foster a lot more creativity. And so it's definitely weird not having that. Like, I talk to other people who work in other fields, like production or in just, you know, my wife's an attorney or whatever. And that lack of just the kind of random face-to-face chats, it really, you know, everything is so task oriented. So you kind of lose that extra kind of layer of things. And I think it hampers things a little bit. I think it just makes it a little tougher, you know, to kind of connect with people. And so creatively, especially, but that, you know, I think it was really great being able to keep the con experience going virtually. I know the fans we talked to really like it and having a chance to get some cool stuff. And I know Aspen's doing a lot of holiday sales like every day and every week over the course of December. And the response has been really strong. And I think that, you know, in times like these, comics and books and movies and music, like it's the arts that kind of, you know, they don't pay the bills, but everything else, like, I think it helps get people through this stuff. I know for me, it's been a godsend kind of diving into things and distracting me from what's going on outside. So.
Yeah. We'll definitely talk about some of those positives. Cause I feel the same way. There's a few things that I've been doing that have brought me, you know, a lot of happiness this year that maybe I wouldn't have otherwise had I been going to shows and been busy and, you know, commuting to work and such. But to kind of stay on the topic of cons, you mentioned, you know, getting a chance to, you know, see collaborators face to face. Maybe that's the only time, catch up with old friends. But there's also something to be said for, like you said, the downtime, hanging out at a bar, you start talking to a colleague and all of a sudden there's the seed of a project, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in fact, the genesis for Artifact One came at WonderCon when Vince and I were just hanging at the booth on a slower Sunday and just kind of talking. And it came out of this kernel of an idea about somebody we knew. And started actually talking about another title and a character for that. And it just kind of evolved into eventually what became Artifact One. And, you know, had we not had that time, you know, would story have germinated, you know, would it have come to fruition, you know, and it maybe, but maybe not, you know. And so I think that I think there's that. And also just especially stuff like Comic-Con, the bigger ones where I get a chance to see artists that I don't get to see any other time. So it really is, I always call it, it's like our summer camp for the comic book community, because it's when we all come together from other places. And, you know, I have a Wednesday night dinner with Nicholas Scott and Andrew Constant, and, you know, like Brad Walker was there last year, and I've gotten to know him solely through these dinners, you know, and our good friend in there, Forrest, as well. And just, you know, you have those kind of traditions, you know, slipping out of the con to go grab a beer with Ben Abernathy, you know, it's always a great time. And you know, yeah, you don't have that. And I think, I don't know about you, Jace, but like, it's hard to, you really have to make an effort to set up calls now, you know, to set up stuff like this, you know, and just with friends, you know, I have a lot of friends who you kind of stay in contact through social media and you banter back and forth here and then, but, you know, actually to sit down and do a Zoom call or just a phone call and have a conversation, you know, we don't always make time for that, you know, with what's going on. And I think it's really important, you know, just to have that contact. As a human, not even as a creator, just as a human.
Yeah, yeah, no, exactly. I mean, you're naming all these people, you know, like Nicola, I love, Brad and I are close. You know, Andrew, I know as well. And it's like, man, I mean, you're right. Like a lot of times I try to set things up. Nicola is a perfect example. You know, she reached out to me right before Black Magic it came out. She was just coming off of Earth 2 for DC. And she was like, you know, Jimmy Palmiotti is one of her mentors. And she's talking about, I need to get my name out there because I got to be, you know, my own marketing. And it was right before Black Magic was coming on. And that was when I got to know her really well at the show that year. We had, you know, a wonderful time. But she's in Australia, so to even set up something like that, and she's busy, mm-hmm. and it's hard, you know, it's hard. So you're right, we go into the cons where everybody's in the same place at the same time, and we're all just kind of having fun. We definitely miss it. So hopefully next year, you know, 2021, yeah. probably toward the end of the year. Do you guys have any plans?
I was just talking to someone about that, like what would be the first con someone would go to, or what would even be the first con there will be? Cause we just don't have a sense, like we're so early in even the vaccinations, I was talking to my wife, like, I don't know, like when are you and I going to get a vaccine? You know, is it going to be Valentine's Day? Is it going to be April? Is it going to be July? And so those things, you know, if it's April, if everybody's getting vaccinated by April, you know, does Comic-Con happen? Maybe, you know, and do we go? Maybe, you know, cause there's all those decisions of, do they have it officially? And then if they have it, are you going to go? You know, and those are two very big decisions to make.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know that I would be comfortable. And I actually, do you know Tony Kim from Hero Within? Mm-mm. So he does a lot of shows. You know, he founded Hero Within. Before that, he was crazy for Comic-Con, you know, and moderates panels and things like that.
Okay.
But so he's, you know, Hero Within, if you're not familiar, they do kind of the more upscale kind of nerd wear. And they table it at a lot of shows, you know, that they're huge. And he's had, you know, that's where they get 90% of their revenue. So he's had to scramble this year. And so I was talking to him, like, you know, you kind of see how the sausage is made. You've been around the con circuit even before. And now with Hero Within, like, what are you thinking about San Diego? And he's like, nah, I'm like 80% sure that, cause now is the time. Usually the end of the year is the time they would be for the vendors. They'd be booking the hotels. And, you know, I mean, you guys would be getting things set up.
Yeah.
And so he's talking about, like, he thinks maybe New York might be the first, but the other thing he said, that's interesting, and see if you have a comment on this, is none of those, like every one of those big shows, they're afraid to be like the first one. Cause you take a risk being the first one of, you know, if people end up getting sick, if there's a backlash, if people are like, hey, is this really what we need to be focusing on when there's, you know, other, you know, problems still going on. So it's like, who's going to be the first one to kind of get the ball rolling?
Yeah, I actually had this idea. I was talking to a friend of mine last night about how if you have, and it wouldn't be for, I don't know where you'd be able to do it, but there's so many malls that have gone out of business across the country. And I just was thinking, like, well, what if you used them and what if you had the cons in a mall and each store is a different publisher or a different main setup, and then you can have artists or whatnot like out in the corridor. It just opens it up and lets it breathe more, so we're not all on top of each other. But I agree. Well, I think it's a catch-22 for them because they don't want to be the first one back, but I mean, that's their business and they want to come back. And it's just, but you're right. I don't know what it will be like. And also, where is the economy? Like, where is people's discretional spending? I'm actually pleasantly surprised with how the comic book industry just specifically has been able to weather the storm somewhat. I mean, it's been bad for people, and I know there's stores that have struggled and whatnot, but it's actually held up better than I thought it would. But it's going to be interesting to see, like, where's the economy in all this? Like, is the economy, like, as even as we get vaccinated, like, is the economy going to trend better in the right direction? People are going to have the money and the means to do it, because like you said, like the hotels and everything, not only is the scheduling of it, but just from a fan standpoint, you know, if you're a fan and you want to go to San Diego Con, you're spending how many hundreds of dollars? Whereas maybe you save that and you go to a regional con and like, maybe I'll just go to the Kansas City one, or maybe I'll go to Planet, you know, I'll go to Planet Con, or I'll go to, you know, North Carolina or any of the other ones that aren't quite as massive, and you save some money on the hotel and stuff, and you get more money to spend for the creators you see there. So.
Yeah. And are some of these smaller shows even going to come back? Like, were they able to, you know, weather the storm?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we don't know. I mean, it's all, and you know, and then the economy for the comic book stores in general and for the comic books as it is, you know, Aspen kind of went on, put things on hold that we were planning to do because of COVID, and we're, you know, they're plotting forward, like how they're going to come back and what that's going to look like and how we're going to do it. But, you know, cause, even though stores are open and things are selling, like, you know, obviously it took a hit, and when you're an indie publisher, you really have to be that much more careful about it, because you know, you can't put Batman on a cover and hope that, you know, and do a couple variants and say, well, that'll get us 20,000 copies right there. So we can, you know, we'll just see. So, and then there's this contraction going on in the business, you know, with fewer titles being put out, even by the major publishers, fewer work, you know, a lot of great artists that were, you know, always busy. And now you see, you know, their commission lists are opening up and whatnot because they're trying to get through it. And, you know, I just hope everybody's able to continue to weather the storm and make it through and come out on the other side. So,
yeah, I mean, I'm like you in terms of pleasantly surprised at how well it went. Because honestly, when it first happened and all the comic retailers started shutting down, I was like, oh my God, this whole thing. And you know how crazy the model is. What other industry do you sell something 2 months before it's actually in your hand, you know, or solicit it 2 months before, and then hope it gets made and hope it shows up so you can actually sell it? It's crazy when you think about it. And when the retailers first started shutting down, I'm like, oh my God, this could be, I mean, I know it was going to go away completely, but I was worried that, you know, the whole thing's a house of cards. It's just going to collapse. But then DC especially made a push to get things back out there. And then it kind of slowly came back and we're doing mail order and things. But I think a big part of it was that so many people, like you said, were stuck at home, and the things that bring us joy and nostalgia for childhood. Hey, I used to be into comics. Now I'm not going on vacation. I can't go anywhere. I'm stuck at home. I'm not even commuting to work. What can I go back to? What can I find? And all of a sudden, and I was mentioning something that brought me a lot of joy. So I used to have a pretty good sized run of Amazing Spider-Man. And it's one of the only times I sold comics. I sold that run. And I thought, well, I was stuck at home. I said, you know what? I'm not going anywhere. I'm not spending money on shows. I'm going to rebuild that run. And I from issue 200 all the way up till present day, I pretty much have
of Amazing Spider-Man. Awesome. Yeah. Did you go the trade route, or were you getting individual issues?
No. So I went individual issues, almost all on eBay, which I bought it all in big chunks. Cause I had an idea. Okay. I'm only going to spend this much per issue. And so when you do that, when you can't buy them like one or two or five, you got to buy big.
Yeah, you buy the lot. Yeah.
The shipping is going to kill you. You know, it raises the, so that was something that brought me like a lot of joy this year. Is there anything comic related?
I did the same thing. Like because I was born and raised in Michigan, and when I moved out here, and I, you know, collected since I was a kid, and I actually worked at a bookstore in high school that at the time, this was in the late 80s, right when the Batman movie came out, Tim Burton's film. And me and the son of the owner, we convinced the owner, Sue Walker, to turn part of the store into a comic book store. So I actually opened a comic book store in the bookstore, in the back of the bookstore, like was all comic books. And, nice. And that was in this small town of Hastings. It was like 8,000 people. And like, it was great. It was awesome. So, I mean, I've been collecting forever, but when I moved out to California, I had to get some money and I wasn't gonna be able to take them anyway. So I did my first show where I sold it, and it was hard. Like it was hard. I sold a lot of good stuff. And I kept like just very specific small things. And so over this break, I started rebuilding just certain things. Like I got the Cap Quits run, you know. Oh, yeah, I love that one. That's fantastic. So I got that whole run.
Yeah, and Mark Grunewald, right?
Yep. And then I got the Centurion Armor Iron Man run of like from 200 up to like 224. I'm actually about to look, I was just looking for Armor Wars because my collection stops right there. And I was like, so I was looking for that.
If only you'd grabbed that like 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. I know. But that's fine. You know, if I have to get a trade, I'll get a trade. But I like the individual issues for obvious reasons. I think we all do as comic collectors, but the trades are just easier to sometimes like to read and to find again, you know, in that regard. But, and then I've been revisiting Daredevil a lot, like Frank Miller stuff. So I got some of those trades. I was rereading that just the other night, and I never made it all the way through the show. So I'm like rewatching season one, and I'm going to finish it up, cause I think I stopped somewhere in season two. It's a great show. I don't know why I got sidetracked, but you know, things fall through the cracks and you get sidetracked on all of it. But comic book wise, it's been a lot of fun to kind of, you know, go and kind of revisit those things. So, and then reading, you know, finding some new stuff, like reading some of Donnie Cates' stuff. Like I picked up his Silver Surfer Black, which I didn't get when it originally came out, and I got that. And there's certain characters where I specifically don't read because they're ones I really would love to write. And so I have this really like this dilemma of like characters I wrote for a long time, I don't really follow. Like Green Arrow, I still don't really read because I, once I done kind of a good chunk on it, and I really attach myself to the character. Like, I have a hard time continuing on with it. But I started picking up Jason Aaron's Thor run with what's his name? The god. What's his name? I'm blanking. The god killer. The character that now, what's his name, is going to play in the movie.
Oh yeah, is it Gore or
Gore? Right. Yeah. So I just picked up that run, and that's beautiful work, and I really enjoyed that a lot. And then I mean, you're right though, we're home and we're just kind of using our time to do that. I think the other thing that's been very helpful is, you know, it's funny, like I used to think that, like, I love comic books and I love working in comics and I love writing, and you kind of start to wonder, like, you know, the necessity of it or the importance of it. Like, you know, what am I doing? Like, you know, what does this really matter in the world in the grand scheme of things, you know, and what I'm contributing? I'm not a doctor. I'm not, you know, I'm not curing cancer. Like, I'm writing comic books. And I have to say that this whole experience has made me rediscover the importance of just interest, you know, whether it be people who like comic books or people who like movies or people who like books or people who follow sports and that's their thing. I'm like, these things, they do kind of provide an outlet for us, and a place to put our passion, and a source of connectivity to other people. And I think there's something really remarkable about that. And so, so it's been nice to kind of see that kind of coming back up. And the only other thing that comes to mind is, I've been really enjoying uplifting shows as opposed to depressing shows. My family and I, we all watched Schitt's Creek, which I thought was a wonderful show with a lot of heart and very funny and warm. And then I just finished Ted Lasso, someone told me I was accused me of being a sponsor for the show, that I was sponsoring the show because I was touting it so much on Twitter the other day. But it's just nice. I don't know. Have you seen it? Have you seen Ted Lasso?
I haven't. So, I mean, you know me, I always feel guilty when I'm watching a show, because I think I should be reading comics. You know, I have podcasts I need to put out. But right. I've heard great. I mean, I do have a list of shows that I want to watch. Ted Lasso is on there. Schitt's Creek is on there. I haven't watched either one yet. I'm hoping, like, so my plan is, once I finish this 12 days of the comic source, which I totally shot myself in the foot, procrastinated it, you know. Because I decided, I the mistake I made is I announced it on you know, an episode. Hey, we're going to put out, you know, first day of Christmas, one episode, second day, two, three, four, all the way up till 12 days. And I had a schedule all planned out to where I could handle it. And then I didn't start when I should have. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh my God, I have, like, you know, 14 days to record 78 episodes. Like, when am I going to sleep? Right. You know, just insane. Like, you don't think it's that many, because it's just, you know, 1 through 12, but you start adding it up and you're like, oh my God.
And it adds up, yeah.
So once I'm done with Christmas and I start going back down to a normal schedule, I am planning on, you know, taking a little bit of a break.
Well, Ted's really great because it's only one season and it's only like 10 episodes. So it's like 30, you know, so you're talking like 5 hours. So it's very manageable, as opposed to diving into a show. It's interesting, like, now I'm at the point where there's a sweet spot for shows that I want to watch. Like, if there's a show that I miss the first time around and it's been around for 7-8 seasons, I'm reluctant to get into it, because I'm thinking, like, God, 7 seasons, that's a lot to do. But if it's only around for a season or two or three, I'm like, oh, that's, you know, that's manageable. You know, I can kind of work that in.
Well, and the other thing is, if it's an older show. So one of the things I did watch, like, early on when the pandemic happened, was I had never finished House, you know, that old Fox show. And, you know, I'd always loved it when I watched it. So I'm like, all right, it's on, you know, Amazon or whatever. So, you know, I'm like, I'm going to start watching it. And, you know, this is back in the early to mid 2000s when everything was 23, 24 episodes. And there's, like, I think eight seasons, I think. I mean, that's like
a lot.
That's 160 plus. Yeah, it took a while, where, you know, the new model now is like, it's, you know, 10 or 12 episodes and you can binge it over. But then I still find myself where, okay, I'm just going to watch one more. I don't know if you do this, but, you know, it's 10 o'clock at night. I'll just watch one more. And before you know it, it's 3 a.m. and you're like, oh my God, I got to be up in 3 hours. What am I doing?
Right, right. Especially shows with, like, the big cliffhanger stuff is that kind of just compels you to kind of.
Every time they do it. Yeah, every time they get me.
Yeah, yeah. That's funny. But you should. That'd probably be the one I would probably, right now, at least that's the one that's in the forefront for me. Is, again, and I think it's just, it's very uplifting. And I think right now it's just exactly what the kind of stuff we need. And, you know, I'm torn because I love The Stand, and, you know, The Stand miniseries just launched on CBS All Access. And I don't have it, so I'd have to buy it, which is one thing, but it's really just like, do I really want to watch a pandemic show?
Yeah.
Like, I just don't know, you know, like I hear like the, what is it this year is the, what was the HBO show about where people disappear? Not Left Behind. Left Behind is like the book series.
No,
I can't remember what it's called, but it's basically like this unusual occurrence happens and like 3% of the population just disappears. And it looks, I've heard it's an amazing show, but again, like I just, with everything now, it's just, this does not sound like the thing that I would want to explore.
Is that the one with Scott Glenn?
I don't know if he's in it. It's Justin Theroux is one of the stars in it. It's HBO.
I think, yeah.
Is that it? Yeah.
Yeah. Justin Theroux, I think, is like the sheriff or something like that.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Back. Yeah. So
I can't think of the name of it, but yeah.
But, yeah, there's no shortage of stuff to distract us right now, which is
no, there isn't. And the other thing that I've heard about Ted Lasso, my wife and I have very different tastes in TV shows, and so it's nice to find something that we can watch together. You know what I mean? I tend to watch things that are a little more, you know, violent, you know, sci-fi kind of things. Although I did get her, when we first started dating, I got her into Stargate. We now have three dogs, and they're all named after SG-1 characters. Which we just got a little puppy that we're trying to house train right now, and that's been a nightmare.
Oh, that's an ordeal. That's an ordeal.
But
yeah, so I was raving about it to my girls. I have two teenage daughters, and Halt and Catch Fire, the Chris Cantwell show. I love that show.
Yeah.
I've already watched it like twice through, I think, and it's just such an amazing show. And I've been raving about it to them about it and telling them about it. And then I was like, oh yeah, I'm rewatching it now. But then I was also rewatching Daredevil, and my youngest came out, and I'm watching an episode of Daredevil, and like it's one of the early episodes, and Karen is walking, and she gets mugged in the thing, and the guy and Foggy rescues her with the baseball bat, and that's the scene she saw, and she's like, oh my god, she goes, I thought you were watching Halt and Catch Fire. I'm like, oh no. so I was like, so here, because there was just, at first it was just a woman talking to another woman in an apartment, and she leaves and she walks to an alleyway, and then she gets attacked, and then she's like, what do you want? And then so I was just, made me laugh that she thought that was Halt and Catch Fire. Made me.
Are you you mentioned Chris Cantwell, are you reading his new Iron Man series?
I'm gonna pick it up. I haven't got it yet. Have you been reading it?
Good yeah stuff? It's really good. So I know Chris. I met him at San Diego Comic-Con, I think in, I want to say 2016. I had interviewed him for his first ongoing series that he did, which was a Dark Horse series called She Could Fly.
Oh, that's right. He did She Could Fly. Right.
Yeah. And so he and I kind of hit it off when we stayed in touch. And at that time, Halt and Catch Fire had ended. And even though I'm in IT, I had never watched it. And then I went back after interviewing. I'm like, yeah, you know, I know this is so good, and everybody tells me I need to watch it. I went, and that was one of those shows, like I was saying, where it kept me up, and I just had to keep watching. And even when I've rewatched it, it keeps me up. You know, it's so great.
Because it's got so many great moments, and the character arcs are so remarkable and how they evolve over time. And I think that for each of them, they each all have their own stories, and then each season has got that such a different feel to it. You know, I think that's it's a remarkable show. I tell everybody, that's like one of the ones now that I tend to like boast about the most to people and telling people to check out. But now I have to check out his Iron Man, and I know he just finished a run on Doctor Doom.
The last issue just came out.
Wednesday.
But yeah, if you've never met him, he's such an incredible guy. And he, even though he's been in TV, he's had all this success. He's going to be co-showrunner on Paper Girls.
Paper Girls, right? Yeah.
So they're in pre-production now for Amazon and all that. Like if he had his way, like if he had to choose one or the other, he would write comics. Like that is his passion. He loves comics, and it comes through in his work. So great. I'm really digging that Iron Man, and the Doctor Doom is great.
I mean, some of the people I talk to, like I know some creators that went from comics to TV, and you know, look, don't get me wrong. I mean, TV is great, and I haven't worked in live action television. I worked in animation, and you know, the money is definitely different. You know, different pay structure there, which is kind of nice. But the thing that I think a lot of people, the thing I love about comics is the collaboration, but also the immediacy of it. Like if I'm working on a project that's going right, then I turn in a script, and within a week or so, I'm getting thumbnails, I'm getting layouts to go over, start getting pages in, and then the colored pages, and it just feeds everything. And it's such a cool thing to kind of see it, as opposed to, you know, you write a pilot and it's in development, and does it get made, and there's that. And, you know, I know creators that wrote several, you know, they worked for years on stuff that went through the process and never even got to the pilot level. And they may have made money off of it, and that's great and that's good, but like, you kind of want to get your stuff out there. And so until, you know, until a script's made, whether it be comic or otherwise, it's not really for anybody else. You know, it's kind of like a private letter to the creative team. So being able to put it out there, that's what really kind of, that's what I love about it, you know?
Yeah. And Chris always mentions, he's like, yeah, so you're creating a TV show. You take your pitch in whatever. And they're like, okay, maybe they buy it in the room, but by the time it ends up on TV, it can be so different because they're the ones putting up the money. And it's so much more expensive to create a TV show than it is to create a comic, you know? So You're kind of beholden, and all of a sudden you got all these cooks, you know, you got all these chefs in the kitchen putting in their input, and you can't say no. So we're apples and oranges, but that's definitely part of it.
Absolutely. Yeah, but no, that's a good one. Yeah. I have to check out the Iron Man, because I love Iron Man, and I want to check it out. I haven't been getting to the comic book stores for individual issues as much as I've been getting to the comic book store to like order trades for curbside pickup. You can't browse. I think that's the bummer. You know, you can't like just go browse and just kind of do it. Like I went a couple weeks ago. I do Collector's Paradise in North Hollywood, which is a great store. And they've got three stores in LA, and Ed, the owner, and I've known for years. And he was like one of the first stores I did signings at, you know, when I started, mm-hmm. you know, being, when I started writing comics. But yeah, you know, you can't really go in, and at least I'm not at the point where I'm going to go in and browse right now. So there's stuff that definitely I have to start checking out a little more. So
now how has work been for you? You know, like you mentioned, you know, Aspen did put everything on pause. But have you been getting ahead on things? Like where are you at with your projects? How has that been?
Well, we were all set to go on something, and then it got kind of put on hold. So we're kind of in a pause, and then we're deciding and figuring out like what, and it's definitely gonna be 2021, obviously we're in December. And so like, when is that, what does it look like? And is it in the same kind of format? Are we going to try to tweak the format a little bit, you know, on what we're doing? And you know, they also have on the flip side, they have some very exciting stuff going on right now, because they've partnered up with Mythos Entertainment, and they're working on developing Fathom and Soulfire's as animated features. And I've seen some of the stuff, and it's really awesome. Like, it's great. There's never been this much forward momentum in those projects than there is right now. So there is kind of a sense of seeing how that plays out might shape a little bit of what we do and when we do it, you know, in that kind of realm. But 2020 for me was really not a down year. It was definitely just more of a year of me working on my own stuff, you know? And so as a writer, and as any creator, I think not having strict deadlines is awesome and awful at the same time, because there's no, you know, there's no due date for anything. And so, and it also was a lot going on. I mean, with the pandemic, and my wife was working from home, my kids are doing school from home. And so I'm taking care of a lot more stuff. And we actually sold our house and moved. So it was kind of dealing with that. I'm trying to stretch, you know, some different muscles. So I've been working on some screenplay stuff and working on more pro stuff, some more hybrid kind of stuff, some comic stuff. And it's all just creator owned stuff. So it's like I said, there's no deadline. And so it's just kind of moving the things along. And I actually did have a Kickstarter campaign I was prepared to start that I put on hold because of the pandemic and everything going on, especially when stuff started going nuts with the post office. And I started hearing crazy stories from people doing Kickstarters about how, you know, the shipping rates were all over the place. And so it was really hard to kind of budget yourself. And I didn't want to get caught into that. And also, like, you know, do people have the money to spend on it right now? Especially because I've never done a Kickstarter before. And my first one out of the gate, I want to make sure I can kind of come out strong. And so I want to make sure comes out at a time and a place where, you know, it can find the people that are interested in it and do well, you know? And so I'm currently plotting it and planning it. And so I'm hoping in early 2021 to kind of launch it and to kind of go. And if it goes how I hope it'll go, it'll actually be kind of the first foray into like kind of doing it on a regular basis.
Self-publishing.
Yeah. Just kind of like, cause I love the model of it, because I feel like it gets it's even more so than just like even more so than raising the production funds up front. It's more about it's almost like a garage band having a garage release, right? Mm-hmm. Where you have like your fans and you put out the CD and it's for limited edition for just the real diehards. And then, you know, you can go wider with it if you want. But I feel like at least the good Kickstarters that I've seen and the ones who really embrace it, they do. They kind of turn it into a real special thing. Like Jimmy Palmiotti does amazing Kickstarters, you know, and the stuff he does. I think he's got a really good operation going there, and he makes everything feel really special. And I think that's it. You do it in a way where what the people are getting by supporting you at this stage is they're getting something that you won't be able to get, you know, 6 months from now. If it does go wider and you find it in bookstores, that version will be great and it'll be the story, but it won't be quite the prestige that it would be if you supported the Kickstarter campaign, that kind of limited edition like sentiment.
Yeah, that first printing. And so it's interesting, we were talking about the good things about comic series. That's another platform that did really well, because a lot of creators, as you mentioned, you know, maybe it was pencils down, and so that's where they turned. And the other thing, and I was worried about this when I first heard it, you know, Boom did a big one with Keanu Reeves. Scott Snyder did a big one, and you kind of worry, hey, is this going to take money away from little guys? And we've been doing this year on the Comic Source, we started doing Kickstarter spotlights every Wednesday where we're bringing creators on, and a lot of the smaller creators that kind of needed help. We'd look for people that were almost funded, but not quite.
Right.
Now, I've been asking them that question. Like, has it hurt? They're like, no, actually it's helped. It's getting more eyes on the platform. They go to, you know, on Kickstarter to support this Keanu Reeves thing, and they're finding these other, you know, campaigns that are going on, and it's been great. The other thing Kickstarter does is not only are you getting your work out there, but you can build a community, you know, and that's like what Jimmy has done. You know, he's built a community, and, you know, you get to know people, even though it's, you know, just digitally, you know, over, you know, virtually, however you want to say it. But all of a sudden you have that community that you can go to and say, hey, I'm thinking about doing this, or I'm thinking about doing that, or how about this? And you get that feedback. It's that direct link to your fans that allows you to, you know, do things that you can't do when it's going through a publisher.
Yeah, a publisher and a store, you know, I mean, and not to cut the stores out, because hopefully the stuff will go there eventually, but, you know, getting like when we did the Lost Spark novel through Aspen, it was a experiment for us because they had never done prose, you mm-hmm. know, and then also marketing it through the comic book stores was like our initial fun. And it didn't work out as well as we wanted to, because the people just didn't order a book, you know, they ordered comic books because that's what they're used to and that's what they mm-hmm. do. And so unless they were retailers we knew and knew me and believed in me, or they were specifically ordered by fans, then they weren't really picking it up. And so, and back then, unfortunately, we didn't have the infrastructure in place to get to reach the Barnes and Nobles and to reach that next step of distribution, which is where it would really do. But even then it's different, because from a book standpoint, those are all returnable. And so it just, yep. the market's completely different, you mm-hmm. know? So, but no, you're absolutely right. And I think that it's almost like a mini convention unto itself, you know, because there's a time period, there's all that, like you said, all that interaction, you are putting out more information and teasing more art in order to be able to boost the signal and get people to go. The stretch goals get cooler and cooler, and that you know people start telling their friends, because like, hey man, back this, because if we get, you know, if he reaches another $1,000, we're all gonna get, you know, a slip case, you know, or something. Mm-hmm. And so and that's the other thing, is it's just cool stuff. Like I just got one the other day, Paris 2019, 21-19, and it came with like a sketchbook and like a concept art book, and it came with a coin, and it came with a postcard. And I just funded the original, you know, I funded it like when it first came out, and I got the hardcover, you know, the standard one, but I didn't go for a bunch of top tiers. And it was just, these are all just add-ons that happen, you know, because it did well enough. And I think that's fantastic. So.
Yeah. So, okay. So see if I can, not to put you on the spot, but can we expect you to come on when the time is right to do
it? Absolutely. I'll be on everything. Yeah, absolutely. No, I'd love to. If we were a month from now, I'd probably start talking about it and say what it is and all that sort of stuff. I'm just not, we're not quite there yet to where I can start talking about it. But it's I'm really excited about it. And again, this is like a first kind of taste of it. And if the format works and the concept works and like the publishing model works into the Kickstarter, I already have ideas for other ones to do moving forward with new ideas and new stories and new properties, but also with some of my own that already exist. So and I'm excited. I mean, I really am, because I think that this year has been, it's like I said, I've been really kind of in a cocoon this whole year, just kind of spinning my wheels and doing my own thing and all that. And so I'm very eager to, you know, get it out there and start talking about it more and start putting stuff out, you know. It's because, I mean, that's what we do. We write stuff and then we share it. Well, otherwise it's just a journal.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and the other thing is that you've been, you know, around long enough, you know, talking about friends that you see at conventions and stuff, and all the people you've worked with over the years. When somebody established like you does one of these things, you do have a little bit of an advantage over somebody who is self-publishing for the first time, doesn't have a body of work. They may not, you know, have the name recognition, first of all. Second of all, they can't, you know, get like Nicola Scott could do a cover for you. And right. That kind of stuff is what pulls people in, because all of a sudden the Knicks fans are coming to check it out. Hey, Knicks doing a cover for this. Let's go check it out. So yeah, those are the kind of things that are great.
Absolutely. And not, and again, I'm not, I can't get into specific, but the part of the appeal of it too, is that everybody's, you know, there's a lot of artists that I'd love to work with that we just don't have the, you know, the scheduling and whatnot. And they're on a DC book or a Marvel book and they're doing stuff. And so they're not going to be able to pull off and do like a big long arc on something, but this is kind of designed for a smaller kind of commitment from artists. So I can have artists do other things, like you said, like a variant cover or something like that. But even more than that, and I think that that's something that I'm excited about, because if this works, I have a plan to like to reach out to some of those other artists, either people I've worked with that I've wanted to work with again, or people honestly where I haven't worked with, but I've been admiring their work for years. And this would give me the opportunity and the right platform to kind of approach them and say, hey, look, you know, I'd love to work with you. Would you be interested in, you know, doing something for this project? And, you know, it wouldn't take, you know, I'm not asking you to do a 100-page graphic novel with right. me, you know? Yeah. So it's something that's more easily digestible. So, cause that's the one thing. I mean, there's no shortage of people I'd like to work with, on stuff. I mean, that's the comic community has always been, was, is, and will hopefully will always remain just a very amazing community of creators. And you know, going back to what we kind of circling back to what we started talking about at the conventions, like it's the people, you know, it's people weren't upset because DC was reducing their staff size. They were upset because people they knew and love were losing their jobs.
Right. You know? Exactly.
And it's very personal to us, you know, and what we love is not some, you know, what we love is not some name on a marquee in terms of a company, but we like Batman and we love Spider-Man and we love, you know, the creators that work on those, the creators that worked on them in the past, and, you know, the Jack Kirby's and the Stan Lee's and the Mike Grunewald's and the people that Bob Layton on Iron Man, like, you know, and then the people that we work with now. Like I was just, you know, I just got an email back from Freddie Williams, who I, you know, don't get to see as much. And we would always almost talk at conventions. That's the only place I really saw him. I saw him and Kiki at their, you know, I'd do Artist Alley and they'd be set up as they usually were. And, you know, Marcus Toe up in Canada, we get to see him a bit, you know, and seeing Nicola at Comic-Con, you know, running into whoever, you know, and that's what I love, you know, that's what I love about and the fans as well, you know, and it's all kind of it's its own little ecosystem. And, you know, you have the fans, like, you know, and the people who support me, like you, and have me come on your show. And I always love talking to you, and you know, I always come on as long as you'll have me, I'll come on.
It's always great
to see you. And even if we're not doing a show, even if we're not doing a podcast, it's just nice to see you.
Yeah,
nice to, you know,
exactly.
When you stop by, and it's like, it's just nice to catch up and hang out and catch a few minutes, you know.
Yeah,
and
make sure everybody's family's doing okay. You mentioned Freddie. That reminds me, yeah, I've been threatened forever. I'm talking to you and I'm not prepared, but I have said this to you before. We need to have you come on, and maybe we'll even have Freddie come on too, because I want to talk about that Captain Atom run, which is criminally underrated. It is such a great run.
Thank you. That was a high point in my creative career in general, and also at DC. Like it just or at DC and also my career in general. Like it was a really it was one of the cooler collaborative experience I had working with the artists and Rachel Gluckstern editing it, and they just letting us do what we want, and Jose Villarubia and colors. It was just a fun experience, and Freddie and I had a great time doing it, and I'd love to work with him again. I know he just started, he's doing a creator book with I'm trying to think. They just announced they're doing a creator book, I think.
I didn't hear that. I have to look
it's
it
like
up.
It's like a fantasy adventure one. God, now it's like the characters come out of a mythical world and they're in Chicago. It looks really cool. Oh, something quest. I don't know. I'm a terrible promoter of other people's stuff, apparently, because I can't remember the names of anything. I'm also terrible coming up with my own names. Frank always picks on me because I come up with the worst titles for my projects. So they always just, I had 3 pages of title concepts for Minefield before we settled on Minefield, and he hated all of them. So
Frank, what does he know?
But Journey came out really well. I love the Journey title. Journey is a great name, and that's like that. So I guess if I came up with only one good title for a project, I guess that I'll take that.
Well, is this creator owned? Is it kind of the direction you want to go at this stage in your career? I mean, or do you still have, you know, ambitions to do things at, you know, over at DC or Marvel?
You know, I would always talk to them about stuff. I mean, in full candor, like, I'm not on their radar right now. Like, they're kind of working on next generation of people, which is great, you know, and I get that. And I still talk to them, especially at DC. And if the opportunity presents itself, absolutely, I would do it. But I'm fortunately at a place in my career, and more importantly, in a place in my life where I can kind of focus on more of the creator-owned stuff. And I feel like you were talking about with Chris with Halt and Catch Fire, like, there is something nice about owning your own stuff. And I feel that, I feel like that's our worth are our ideas. And if we sell them all off, like used cars, not to degrade working for a big two or whatever, or working on a licensed property, because it's a lot of fun, but you don't really have a stake in it, you know? And you know, if you're going to invest all your creativity and all your energy to work on a character for however long, and then at the end of the day, you know, you make a little money, but then at the end of the day, like, that story gets changed and made into a feature that makes billions of dollars, and you get a little microscopic special thanks at the end of the credits. It's kind of, you know, I mean, not many industries really take care of the creators very well, you know? And so the ones that have been able to really thrive have been ones that have created their own thing and carved out their own space, you know? Like, there's a universe where Mike Mignola never creates Hellboy because he just kept doing, you know, work for the big two the whole time. Yeah, and then we don't have that.
That is not a universe I want to live in, a universe
exactly. without Hellboy. Exactly. You know, I mean, a lot of it, there's a lot, like, and you know, it doesn't work like the book market doesn't work that way. Just in, because I always, the big analogy I always say is that if the book market was like the comic book market, you know, George R. R. Martin would never create a Game of Thrones. He would just be writing Middle Earth stories in the Tolkien universe, you know, and they would just keep, you know, building that or whatever, you know. But we have such affinity for these worlds that we grew up loving. And so, of course, like, if someone said, hey, do you want to write a Star Wars thing? You're going to jump, because it's like, oh my God, it's Star Wars. Like, I had the toys and I saw the movies and I had sheets and pillowcases and posters and, you know, and all those. And the same thing with the comic book characters. Like, there's a legion of comic book characters I'd love. I've never written The Question, and I'd love to write The Question. I was actually had plans to get him into my Green Arrow run on Brightest Day. And the new 52 came and kind of, you know, put the kibosh on that. So, you know, there's a host of mine. I've never written the X-Men other than my first little 11 pager, you know, and like, I love Cyclops and Colossus and Jean Grey and Storm and Beast and Nightcrawler. And I, you know, that's probably my biggest run of comics is my X-Men run, you know? And so, they get you. That's how they get you. Cause they, you know, they have all those, the toys cool that toy. We all love. Yeah. You know? So I would still do stuff, but I think it's important for creators to work on their own things as well, because I think that's a lot where a lot of new ideas come. But also, just I think that's where a lot of if you can get there, stability comes from. You know, you're the master of your own domain.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So I was talking to Jason Inman the other day, and he had made a comment on Twitter, and then I had him on the show, and we were talking, and his thing was, if you have a great idea for a story, right, and it's a Superman story, or it's a Batman story, or it's a Spider-Man story, don't wait to tell that story with that character just because that's how you originally conceived it. Because, you know, we were just talking about how the industry and the reason we love it is because of the people in it. And on the outside looking in, people that don't understand the comic book industry, they think it's this big, massive community that's so much bigger than it actually is when you start talking about creators. when in reality, there are more professional NFL players and more professional major league players than actual professional comic writers working at any one time. Only one guy gets to write the Batman monthly title. Only one guy gets to write.
Right. You know, but, and at least from an artist standpoint, the artist, you can only have an artist can only do one book. Whereas if you have a writer who's popular, like a Bendis or a Snyder or a Johns or an Aaron or a Donny Cates right now is on fire, which, and I love their stuff and God bless them. I mean, I wish them all the success, but from a business standpoint, as another creator, like, well, if Bendis is writing 6 books at DC, you know, and they're instead of putting out 50 books, now they're only putting out 30 books. Well, now he's writing instead of like 8% of the books, he's writing like 15% of the books. Mm-hmm. And also I get from a business standpoint that if DC knows if they put Bendis's name on the book and they have them creatively, you'll have it. But also just from a marketing standpoint, like it's going to move product, it's going to move books. And so I don't, you know, it's like people talk to me about like, oh, this and that. And isn't it awful? Like, you know, when I got kind of, you know, like that I got kind of removed from Teen Titans and, you know, what they do with this or what they put me on this. And it's like, you know, at the end of the day, they're their characters, you know, mm-hmm. and the company owns them and they hire me to do a job and I come on board and I do the best job I can. It's up to them, you know, and it's if they want me around, great, you know, and there's stuff I can contribute and they're happy with what I contribute. Fantastic. But I'm under no delusion that like I have any ownership over the characters of Green Arrow or the characters of Captain Atom, you know, or Superman or, you know, or Nightwing or Teen Titans or even, you know, the Soulfire universe, you know, which I put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into over the years. You know, I've written more Soulfire than I've written anything in my life, other thing in my life. And that's a little different because it's such a small community, because it's an independent company. And I came on in as of, there are only 3 issues in existence before I jumped on board. And so I've really helped shape a lot of that universe. And that's been a lot of fun and very rewarding for me because I love world building mm-hmm. almost as much as I love writing the actual scripts. Like I just love conceptualizing all that big picture stuff, almost like creating the mythology of characters and their universes and their worlds. But yeah, I mean, it's their, you know, it's their bag, you know, and they do with what they want, you know, and, you know, we're, it's almost like working for the president. We, you know, we serve at their pleasure, you know, yeah. And if they want me off, they'll take me off. So.
Yeah. That is a phrase I'm very familiar with, you know, working as IT technology in a restaurant group. It's all about operations. They're the one that's bringing in the money and paying the bills.
Right.
So I, you know, I'm just here to support them any way I can. Definitely serve at their pleasure, even when they'll ask us to do one thing one day. This is how we want it, 100%. And then the very next day, we never wanted that. We want it 180 degrees.
What are you thinking?
Yeah.
Right. And you, yeah. So
exactly.
Yeah. It's you know, it's, but it's like, it's, look, I mean, at the end of the day, very fortunate for the stuff I've been able to do. I feel very lucky for the people I've been able to work with and all that. And it didn't take a global pandemic for me to appreciate what I've been able to do and the opportunities I've had. Like I've always tried to be very appreciative of what I've been able to work on and the people I've been able to work with. And I've just tried to do good work and see what happens, you know? So, but the stuff I'm working on now is different. It's not superhero stuff. I think that, you know, Marvel and DC kind of have the market on the superhero stuff. So, and that's what you said about like, well, you know, if you have a story for like a Superman, you know, don't wait, like Jason's comment, like I get that, but there are certain stories that only really work with that, but I do totally agree with his sentiment. And Jason's a great guy. Like I haven't seen him in a long time. Last time I ran into him I bumped into him at Earth 2 like before this all happened. And he was always really great. You know, I met him when he was at DC a really good guy, which 90% of the people in this industry are really good people. You know, there's some bad actors out there and some people you got to watch out for and people that, you know, take advantage of their station. But for the most part, like, I think we're all just, you know, we all love the world. We love the community and we just try to keep doing what we're doing.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, so many of us, so many creators, and then so many people on my side doing the journalistic stuff, we're fans first, you know, and nobody, as you know, nobody says, I'm going to be rich, so I'm going to become a comic book creator.
Right, right.
That's not a thing.
But that's what they think, though. And it's so crazy how so many people think that. They think that this is a huge, big money-making operation and that, like, and even look at, like, if you follow, like, Greg Capullo, like, I follow him on social media. That guy works his tail off and he's always just like 10 hours did 10 hours today, did 12 hours today. You know, I'm going to take a day off. It's first day off in 35 days. Like that's brutal. You know, that's a lot of work. And I know he does well and he does amazing work, but like, that's tough, you know? And people do work in this business because they love it. They don't do it because they, you know, it's because you love the stuff, because you grew up loving it, or because whatever it is, you connected with it. And it was just the world you wanted to live in, you know, the world you wanted to create in. So
yeah.
All right, I have to ask, who's the Moon Knight? Who did the Moon Knight behind you?
That's Jason Metcalf.
Yeah,
who's an artist who's a friend of mine, and he's been up and coming. He does a lot of covers for like Zenoscope. He's done some covers for Valiant. He's got some creator owned stuff that he's been threatening to come on and finally start a Kickstarter and come on and talk about.
Well, tell him I like his Moon Knight, because what I can see, I love Moon Knight. No, that's a really cool image back there.
Yeah, awesome. And then so on the other side, I've got, everybody seems to love this one too. You can see that. So Mark Brooks, I don't know if you know Mark, but
yeah,
he's a friend as well. And one of his favorite characters is his Taskmaster. And Mark and I are of a similar age. And he did all those cool Tron inspired when the second Tron was coming out.
Uh-huh.
So he did a Taskmaster Tron inspired for me.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
That's
I love Mark. He's great.
That hangs on the other side. Yeah. And you know, like you said, so many of these people, and I've missed everybody. I'm threatening that, you know, when next time I am at San Diego, like, you're going to have to peel me off, because I'm just going to be, you know, hugging everybody. It's going to be so good just to see everybody, you know?
Yeah. It's going to be a big hug of like 90,000 people all hugging each other. Like, I'm my whole thing is hopefully I don't cry when I hug the first person that, the funny thing is the artist that I work with a lot in the past, Jonathan Marks, he's actually done a couple of Kickstarters. I picked the one up. He did a Rime of the Ancient Mariner, and he does another one called Something Punch. But I ordered it, but it's not out yet. But they did the Kickstarter for it. Anyway, and I was at there's an amazing used bookstore in North Hollywood called the Iliad, and I took my girls there. And this was right before the shutdown, and when it was just like, oh, things are wonky, what's going on? They started saying to stay home, to the point where we saw each other. He was there. I gave him a hug, and we immediately like parted. And we're like, "Oh wait, are we not supposed to do that anymore?" Yeah. Like it was. That's how close it was to this. And he's like the last non-family member, household member that I had human contact with. And it's just this amazing thing that like I remember, and like it's just like it just sticks with me because it's so bizarre. You know, it's such a strange time. Such a strange time. You know.
Yeah, that was back when we didn't think it could possibly last this long either.
Yeah. It was like, oh my God, 6 weeks on lockdown. That's crazy. Yep. How are we ever going to manage? And now look at us. We're, you know.
What? So I actually had a similar kind of experience. So my wife and I, we got invited to go to a screening of Bloodshot by Dinesh Shandasani.
Oh, wow. Cool.
And so we went, and that was like, it was on my birthday that we went. So it was March 12th. And then, you know, it was a Thursday. And that was the day that Trump, you know, first came on TV and, you know, said, hey, this is actually a thing. Before that, he had, you know, he still didn't obviously take it seriously enough, but that was the first time where we thought, okay, well, now it's over here. You know, before it was just a China thing. And that was the first day. And I remember being at the screening, and then, you know, after there was like a little gathering with drinks and everything. And yeah, people were like, wait, you know, you're getting introduced to people. And you know how usually it is. Everybody's like, oh, shake it. And everybody was like, wait, are we
doing this?
A lot of elbow bumping and, you know, and then basically the next week it was, let's all lock it.
It makes sense. So the March 12th, that was your birthday. And then March 3rd, that was my girl's last day of school. They sent him home Thursday and said, yeah, we're not going to have school on Friday the 13th. Yeah. And then Saturday the 14th was Pi Day. And I took my oldest, we went and saw Emma, because she loves Jane Austen. So we went and saw Emma at the Arclight in Hollywood. And that was the last time I was in a movie theater. And that was like, that was it. That's how we always know Pi Day was the day that like the home life kind of started. So
yeah. How has it been for, well, first of all, I can't remember, forgive me. How old are they now? Are they the high school age?
High school. Yeah. 17 and 15. So yeah.
And how's that been for them? Cause my daughter's 9, and it's been a little bit of a struggle. And here in Phoenix, schools did open back up for a little while, but we had the option to keep her home, and we did. So she's been remote learning this whole time, and it's been a little tough, but with your girls being older, has it been easier?
Yeah, I think so. I think your girls at that age where it's tough to kind of keep them kind of engaged, you know, and on screen, you know, that just kind of, I mean, my girls are at the point, being both in high school, that First of all, I think that that's just an easier age to keep them on task. And our school did a really good job of like making it seamless. Like it's just like a normal school day. The hours haven't changed. You know, the periods are all the same. It's just different teachers popping on. And I'm just fortunate that my girls, like they care enough about school to get their stuff done. You know, like I feel for parents who's got a teenager who's all about the social scene at school, you know, and didn't really, wasn't, you know, they had to, like if you had to be on your kid about homework in school before this, I got to imagine after, it's just got to be extremely hard.
Yeah.
So, I'm insanely lucky, and I'm not just boasting because they're my kids, but I'm insanely lucky. They're good kids, and we got really lucky. They take care of their stuff. So, and my oldest is now applying to colleges, you know, and that's interesting because, I mean, I gotta hope by next fall, like things are, you know, because if not, then what are we doing? Like, I just,
yeah,
we're not. But it impacts. So she's applying to a bunch of different schools that she may have not applied for before because we just don't know. We don't know what it's going to be like, what areas will be better to go to, if she's going to have an option to go to certain areas. You know, with some of the schools, it's how are they struggling financially? You know, there's been a couple dozen schools, universities that have closed down. And like, God, can you imagine? I can't even imagine like being in college and your college shuts down. I mean, college is like, it's like your library shutting down, or like your city government, your mayor quitting and just closing up city hall and saying, yeah, we're going to, the town's closed, you know, like we're just not going to be there. So,
yeah, I mean, as a parent, as much as this has been a struggle, what I really feel for is the kids that have missed out. I mean, we, you know, we're of a similar age. We never went through anything this just absolutely out of the blue from left field when we were kids, you know, and there's kids missing out on once in a lifetime opportunity, you know, grad night, prom, graduation, you know, and I just feel so bad. There's no way to get those things back. Weddings, funerals, you know, it's terrible.
Yeah, I think one thing I was thinking about when I was out, because I have a dog and I do a lot of, and I just walk just to get out of the house. And I do a lot of walking and some running, and you see babies now in strollers and you smile because that's what you do when you see a baby, you smile at a baby and they can't see it because they're in a mask. And so I was thinking about like, think of all the babies that aren't going to see any smiling faces at them because they mirror, like that's part of the way they experience the world, is they mirror what they see. And so imagine being a baby and the only people that smile at you are your parents, and the rest of the people you see are these mouthless creatures, eyes looking at you. Like, I just wonder, like, you know, I know child psychologists and psychologists or and psychiatrists are going to be like studying, you know, and educators are going to be studying, you know, the impact of this on all the age brackets, from teenage to, you know, adolescence to, you know, the preteen to toddler to babies, you know, and how this impacts people. And I don't think we're in our 40s and it affects us. Like, you know, we haven't grappled with that. As I say, you know, people ask how you're doing, and I say that, you know, hanging in there is the new fantastic.
Yeah.
Like that, if you say you're hanging in there and mean it, like that's like, you know, that's like patting yourself on the back time, you know.
Yeah.
Like
it's, yeah, that's pretty much my standard response. You know, you used to be, oh, fine, good, great. Now it's, yeah, hanging in there, just getting through it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, what else can you really say? And just, you know, and but you know, internally, like, we're very fortunate, and you know, we're all healthy, and you know, we've got a place to stay, and we've got food on the table, and that's you know, and there's so many people, it's just so hard. It's, there's so many people who don't have that, you know, and are struggling. And you know, the homeless population here in Los Angeles is really just getting, you know, it's gotten really bad, and they just don't have a place to go, and you know, they've started this program where they actually open hotels for the homeless, which has been great, and they've actually earmarked some places for them to kind of go but then there's some that just don't want to go into something, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it's just a lot. I just feel for so many people in so many different parts of the country. It's hard to wrap your head around, you know. It's hard to, you know, have any sort of sense of anything with that, you know.
Yeah, well, hopefully in about a month we'll you know, start taking some steps in the right direction. That's my hope. So,
yeah.
But Christmas is just a couple days away. And as you're all listening to this, if you're listening to it on the day it's released, it is Christmas. So what's the plans for the Kroll Clan? You guys have any traditions? Like, is Christmas a big deal at your house?
It is. So it's interesting because we just sold our house. So we're in a new place. So it's a little different. We actually got an artificial tree for the first time, just because the whole concept of going two reasons. One is the concept of going to get a tree, a real tree, just didn't seem as appealing this year. Mm-hmm. But also, we were able to put it up the day after Thanksgiving. And so we've had a tree up for 4 weeks now. We're like, screw it. It's going to be Christmas as long as we can make it, yeah, as long as we can have it. You know, so this year we're just going to be hanging out. It's funny, we're actually going to do a tradition that we did a few years ago, was when it came out. We ended up going to see La La Land on Christmas Day when it came out. And we all enjoyed it. And it was like one of those first movies that we saw as a family in the theater where it was for all of us, as opposed to just kind of the cartoon for the kids or something that we drag the kids along to. So it was like the beginning of us starting to all watch stuff together. And so it's kind of has a special place for us. And so we're going to watch La La Land, and we're going to, you know, we're going to do the presents, and we're going to, you know, make dinner and hang in, call family. That's, I mean, that's a lot we do. You know, I have a lot of family back in Michigan, so I spend a good part of the day, you know, ringing them up and saying hey and whatnot. And yeah, so that's kind of a thing. How about you guys?
Yeah, well, you know, you notice the tree.
We got four trees, right? So yeah,
Christmas is a huge deal around here. You know, we have four full-size trees and lights outside, and my wife makes this place beautiful. And one of the things we're going to miss out on this year is she does such a great job. We want to share it. We want to open our home. So, you know, we invite coworkers over and have what we call cookies and cocktails. And it's always a big hit to have everybody come over. So
the best things in the world.
Yeah. We're not doing that this year. You know, I would feel terrible to get somebody sick. So yeah, we're kind of doing the same thing. I mean, even though my mom lives in the same town, we're just going to go over there just for, you know, the barest amount of time. And we're not, normally we travel back to California where my family is, you know, we're not doing that this year. My son is going to come in from Vegas, and yeah, we're just going to hang out, probably watch Wonder Woman, and
yeah, that's what we're going to do too. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm actually going to put my son to work. You know, all these 58 long boxes, I have to rearrange my whole studio as it looks now.
Oh, wow.
My anniversary was about a week ago, and my wife got me like a full size cabinet video game that I need to stick somewhere.
Happy anniversary. How many years? Yeah.
Nine.
Because
I mean, if you, it's 18 years from, you know, when we met, but
right.
So I always have to do the math. I'm like,
happy anniversary. What's the anniversary? What's the date? It was a New Year's Eve, or
no, it's the set. It was about a week ago, so it was the 17th.
Happy anniversary, congratulations. Ours is coming up, it's January 13th, so you know, we're getting there. So, but congratulations.
And what number is that for you?
It'll be 19.
See, so you had to do the math too.
I did do the math too. Yeah, I'll be 19 years. You're right. Okay. I didn't stand corrected. It'll be 19 years. So, it's a long time. So,
well, I'm sure it'll still be special, but the next one will be even more special because all this will be behind us. And that's what I'm telling everybody, you know, like I want everybody to have a happy holiday and, you know, whatever you celebrate, Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Festivus, whatever it is, have a great one, but be responsible. You know, we want this thing to end, and then we can all get together in 2021 at Christmas time and think back to, you know, 2020 Christmas and how, wow, that wasn't that great, but we got through it.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. I think like you say about like the next convention you go to, or next Christmas or next New Year's Eve or whatever. And like, you know, the world will hopefully be, you know, I think we've really, really, like, we don't know how much we've lost. We don't know how much we've like had to kind of go without, and how much change we've had to endure, and all the little things that will all add up. And I think that when we can get back to, which I'm assuming will be once enough people are vaccinated and whatnot, and we can get back to normalcy. But I don't think, you know, I think it'll be remarkable. Like, I really do. I hope that out of this trying time that some really positive things can come out of it, you know, and make good out of a horrible situation, and some things that can kind of change. I think hopefully, if nothing else, we appreciate, like, I feel like in the beginning, everybody started appreciating everybody a lot more, and then they got tired of appreciating everybody. Like, I feel like everybody treated like sanitation workers and grocery workers and delivery people and with a lot more respect for like a month.
Yeah.
And I always did, and I still do, and I will continue to, because that's just how I am. But I feel like everybody was on board. Everybody's being super like appreciative of everything. And then people got tired of it. And now you have, you know, idiots fighting, wearing masks and all that sort of stuff, stupid stuff. That's just unfortunate.
Terrible. And I liken it to kind of the instant entertainment that we have at our fingertips now. So many people have just become these, I don't know, trolls, for lack of a better word, that, you know, kind of, they're so used to just having it immediately. There's not enough empathy out there or patience, you know? And it's like, man, we're all so much more alike than we are different.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Whether we, you know, like the same thing, whether you're a Star Trek fan or a Star Wars fan, or you love Batman or you love Spider-Man, you know, whatever, it doesn't matter. We're all much more alike than we are different. So,
yeah,
you know, if you're having a hard time with somebody, you don't like them or whatever, just for 1 second, just say, what if I was in their shoes? What if I was in their position? That's all it takes.
Yeah.
It's really not that difficult. So.
Yeah. Just wonder, like, what are they going? It's like that thing. Like, if, you know, you, somebody comes, like, I'm this terrible, not terrible thing, but like, I have this thing where I, if I do something bad or just inadvertent, like it bothers me, like to the point, like if I accidentally cut somebody off in traffic, because I don't really cut people off in traffic, but if I accidentally do it because I didn't see them, whatever, I feel horrible. And then I almost want to catch up to them to do like a little sorry wave, like, you know, or whatnot. Or like when I was first out here, I got someone in trouble because I stayed in a parking spot too long on a movie lot. I went to go see somebody on this lot, and I was like, he's like, you can't park there. I'm like, I only give you like 5 minutes. And then I got distracted, and all of a sudden then it turned into a big thing, and he got in trouble. And I look at me. It's 22 years later, and I still talk about it. I was like, oh, I still feel awful. I was like, did he lose his job? Was that his first job out here? Did he end up leaving and going back to Pennsylvania, you know, because you get so frustrated, you know, like what, you know?
It's just, see, there's the writer's imagination extrapolating the worst thing. You ruined this guy's life because you stayed in a parking lot or a parking spot 2 minutes too long.
But that's actually, I think that's writing. I think one of the best things about writing is it does make you see people, you know, and not just from the, oh, everybody's the hero of their own story and the villain, so you can identify with Dr. Doom or with, you know, Galactus, but like just most anybody, you know, you start, everybody's got their own story to tell, and everybody's got their own issues and stuff that they're dealing with. And if you come at it from that standpoint, it really can work in the real world. You kind of see people, you know, for who they are collectively, and not just one little thing or one little incident or word or event, you know.
Yeah. So. And it's so important to just see them as people. Cause like you said, and I 100% agree with this, that everybody has their own story, and everybody also has their own stuff, you know, their own baggage or whatever it is they're dealing, their own challenges they've gone through in life. That's what makes us all unique. And those are the stories that people have, and that's what makes them interesting. So don't, you know, make them feel bad or, you know, be prejudiced against them because that's what makes them unique. That's what makes it this world what it is, you know, the collection of individuals, that it's bigger than a sum of its parts, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. Amen.
Well, I think that's a great note to end on, JT. It's been great seeing you and catching up, and we'll definitely have you back on when it's time to talk about the Kickstarter. You know, whether it's if you want to tease it before it starts, or you know, after you've just launched. In the meantime, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on social media if they want to follow along?
Okay, great. And thanks for having me, Jace. It's always good seeing you, and it's always good just talking. And it's even just fun just to talk when there's nothing specific to talk about. It's just nice to have a conversation. So it's kind of nice not to have anything to push for a minute.
Yeah, you're not plugging, doing the marketing thing for once.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, basically the only thing I'm on right now, I'm on Instagram at JT Kruhl, and I'm on Twitter at JT Kruhl. So those are the kind of the main. And fortunately, as a writer, I don't post as much on Instagram because I don't have as much to share. I always am jealous of all the artists that get to post so much cool stuff like day in and day out. And they're like, I was doodling. So I whipped together this, you know, Moon Knight sketch, and it's phenomenal. And it's just like, oh yeah, it was 10 minutes. I was on hold with the health insurance company, and I just whipped this thing together, or the delivery company. And so.
Yeah. They put together this incredible sketch. Well, this is just my warm-up sketch for the day. I'm like, wait, that's your warm-up sketch. What does your regular work look like? Yeah.
Great. Yeah. Phil Jimenez posted pictures of Wonder Woman. He called them practice pages, and I saw him, and he looked phenomenal. He just found them in his stuff. And I posted, and I was just like, yeah, there's a lot of artists now just screaming the word, what do you mean practice?
Yeah.
they look stunning. So, but that's where people can find me. So, but again, thanks for having me on. And I wish everybody a very happy and healthy holiday. Stay safe, everybody. And you know, hug your loved ones that you can, and wave to the ones that you can't. And hopefully we'll see each other all in 2021 and brighter days.
Yeah, definitely. And I echo JT's sentiments. You know, happy holidays, Merry Christmas from everybody here at the Comic Source. And I'll put links to JT's social media in the show notes, everybody. So if you're having a hard time finding him, you can go and click there. So that's going to do it for this episode, everybody. As always, we want to thank you for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.